Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of This Week in Mormons. I am your lovely co-host, Jeff, and I believe...
Hello.
Hi. Oh, hi.
I am the fellow co-host, Al. Very happy to be here today.
Did you notice that we said fellow co-host? See, this is important because we need to be a parody with one another.
We're like brothers.
In a way, especially with how much we bicker and whatnot.
And then, in other ways, we're like sisters.
Because we also...
And in other ways, we're like distant cousins that only see each other every 3 years when they can afford to go to the reunion.
Which actually is kind of sad. I feel like I see you like once a month, even though we go a very long time sometimes without seeing one another.
Yeah, we were like years between it last time. Anyway.
Yeah, weak sauce. Hurt my feelings. So,
neither here nor there. How was your week, Jeff?
Busy week, my friend, but not bad.
You were a working man this week, yes?
Yes, you may all remember from last week's riveting episode. I forgot the title. Oh, the Mysteries of the Granite Mountain.
Best titles. Love it.
and by the way, if you have other ideas for titles, please drop us a line
at
the website.
We won't use yours because we like ours better, but...
Generally speaking,
If you'd like to throw your hat in the ring, feel free.
Yeah, because maybe if you have a good one, we have no problem randomly and arbitrarily naming a show based on absolutely nothing that we talk about.
So. Yeah, maybe. I mean, good luck. Good luck. So try it out.
That's our contest. I am announcing today the TWIM contest for...
Jeff, we're not ready. Don't do it.
Shh. Hear me out. The official contest for the name of next week's podcast. Or episode, rather.
Dun, 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 dun,
so if you
dun.
Comment on this episode...
I propose something around the A-Team. Murdoch.
Don't lead them on. No leading questions.
Perhaps. Well, maybe they'll have some ideas after our Zarahemla Times weighing in.
Oh, we love the Zarahemla Times, don't we? Anyway, so yes, you must all chime in. All of you, every single one of you who listens, go to thisweekinmormons.com. And give us your ideas for a name. I just thought of that right now. And I'm rather impressed with my vision.
You're a visionary man. You're like that Sufjan Stevens.
Sufjan Stevens is a visionary, Al.
Not a jerk. A visionary.
Not at all. A jerk. And my sister pointed out to me today that as she listens to this, she's aware of many of the inside jokes that you and I have together.
Yes.
And so she listens to it and she laughs because she was there for a lot of it and understands everything. Like how we referenced the old the nose-touching date story that you have. Things like that.
Oh, that's a wonderful story, actually.
It is. And just things along those lines. And she laughs hysterically because she remembers experiencing.
Once we take
this
show on the road with a live studio audience, they have that to look forward to. I will tell that story.
I think we should take it on the road now. We should try to like book Planet Hollywood or something.
No, we should just book Deseret bookstores. You know, like they do like book signings. Well,
yes.
Mormon book signings, of course, only like 8 people show up. We could totally draw that crowd, I bet. We'd have to kind of canvas the city to get all 8 of our fans out. But I think like the Joseph Smith Memorial Building right downtown Salt Lake.
Definitely.
You could play the piano while I did beat poetry.
I like it. I like where you're going with this. See, and the even better thing is we're basically having a planning meeting on the air, which I really love.
Brilliant.
Anyway, the week was great. We hope you all had a nice Mother's Day, everybody. Hope you loved your moms.
Did you do anything wonderful for your mother?
The usual lovely pleasantries of flowers and cards and whatnot. And unfortunately for my brother and sister, who are twins, it was also their birthday on the same day. So they get a lot of
love.
What
a bunch of jerks they are.
I know.
Who does that? Taking like one day a year. Is that too much to give a mother? And they've got to...
They had to go
party.
And be born within the time period when they could
I would,
have their
I would like
Mother's
to come
Day.
Out and rant against proflowers.com.
Proflowers.com?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm far away from my mother, and so I have to use the shipping in the box services for my floral delivery needs. And so I have all these coupons from Pro Flowers because I've ordered from them before. And so they have like this like $20 sale, right? And so it's $20 for whatever the flowers were. I don't know. They were lovely, so I picked them. And so I'm following through, and I'm like, $20, all right, we can do that. Free vase, fantastic, yada yada. Free shipping, this is even better, awesome. So I get to the end, my $20 purchase, they tack on a $9.95 processing fee, a $2.95 rural fee, and a $1.95
rural fee.
Yeah, well, because apparently, even though my family lives in town, our town is too remote, so they call it rural. And then on top of that, they charge another $1.95 processing fee because they're flowers and they have to be processed carefully. Well, no poop, Sherlock. You're in the floral business. Of course, that should be factored into the equation. Don't tell me $20 and get me to the checkout and make me spend $37 to get my mom some flowers. It was twice the price. And then, just to spite them, I went and like tried to sign up for another American Express credit card so I get the 20% discount just to knock it down a few pegs.
Uh-huh.
But I got too lazy about midway through. So I just ended up paying the $37.95. It was a terrible experience. And I look forward to 1-800-GO-FLOWERS or whatever the FTD flowers.
1-800-FLOWERS, let's do them. Because yes. If you saw, he was on Undercover Boss. It was a very moving episode.
Oh, I'll watch that. Maybe that will sway me forever.
It actually wasn't. I don't know if you've seen that show. At first, when I saw it, I thought the generosity of these bosses to the the employee when they reveal themselves later on to the employees that they duped the entire time. It used to be pretty astounding the stuff they do. Like, I'm going to give you the money for your own 7-Eleven franchise. All right.
That guy was great, Yuri.
The Kazakh guy was outstanding. And then they've gotten kind of weak as of late. And the best one, now that I'm remembering this, and the 1-800-Flowers one. This man, before he was very impressed with this woman who has worked with flowers for decades and this and that. She did a great job in the store and da-da-da. He told her, what we're going to do, since you've always wanted to arrange flowers and design stuff, is we're going to name a flower arrangement after you.
Okay, yeah, that's lame.
And I was waiting for the follow-up. Like, and on top of that, we're going to
give you
$5,000. And then
give you your own house with that flower.
And no, yeah, and the best part was the quote of this woman just said, you know, you work hard and you want wonderful things in your life, and then someone comes to you and tells you that they're going to name a flower after you. And, you know, that's just the best thing in the world. And I'm sitting there suppressing belly laughs the entire time. I'm a terribly cynical man. It's wrong, but, I mean, come on, it's funny.
Poor her. I mean, she's watching these other ones. She's saying, this guy got a 7-Eleven franchise? And I'm walking away with my own flower arrangement. Seriously. However, with the floral fees added on, it probably was about the same value when you look at it. I mean, a 7-Eleven franchise and an actual bouquet of flowers that you were able to take home probably cost the same amount. You stupid online floral people. And that's my rant anyway.
So yeah, we hope you all had a nice Mother's Day. Anyway,
that's what we're trying to say.
Anyway, other than that, things have been going fine. It's been busy times, I guess we could say. I started the new job.
Enough about you, Jeff.
From last week. Well, just so you know, it went well.
How about me? I'm doing great.
Long hours, though. Long
hours. I'm doing great.
That was fine. This morning, as you may be aware, we did Mormon Helping Hands out here in all of Southern California. I think it was actually statewide, the whole thing. And yeah, so I went to a little regional park, and we got to clean trails and paint stuff and pull out staples. We mostly stuck to cleaning trails. It was very good times.
Did I hear right? Your girlfriend painted a wall?
Yes, my girlfriend painted a wall.
That's a very noble thing. So give her our gratitude.
She did it with graffiti.
did she paint it in new artistic
She's
colors?
Sitting right across from me as we're recording the episode and trying to signal to me things to say. And I'm pretty sure she said we used graffiti, but I don't. Do you need to come say it to the people, Jill? I think they were covering graffiti, which would seem.
Oh, that would make more sense. But either way, it was a pretty big initiative because it got. Did it get picked up in the LA Times? Is that right?
Yes, it did. It's a wonderful PR move for the church, obviously. We're happy to give selfless, anonymous service, unless it means it can be a huge photo op for the church. So,
I don't know. I have mixed feelings on that.
But it was good. I thought it was fun. You know, we're giving the service. There's no shame wearing those little vests that say helping hands. I don't have a problem.
And then lending that helping hand. Like Neil Diamond would say, hands, reaching out. Touching you.
Touching me.
Touching me. That's right. So anyway, we've had enough banter. What are we
doing? Oh, we have. So, whatever. Good times. Oh, last off, did you see Iron Man yet?
No, I haven't seen any movies in about, I'd say probably 2 months.
You live a sad life.
I work, Jeff. I work.
So do I. I work too.
Wait,
did
you see it? Was it great? I heard... One of the companies around here that I know some of the guys in, they do comic books, and so they're all aficionados in the comic book world, and they said it was like a 2-hour promo for the next 4 films they're gonna do.
Well, I've heard the same thing, that it appears like one giant promo for the Avengers movie that they're putting together,
and Captain America, and
for all that stuff. Yeah. So,
did you enjoy it? Were you pleased?
I didn't see it. No, actually, what I did is I tried to go bowling with people and none of them showed up. So those of you who knew you were supposed to be there, you are called out and you are bad, bad people. So let's move right along to our actual episode content. A few things. You may remember last week we discussed, of course, the YouTube challenge, the Book of Mormon YouTube challenge. And now we're going to talk about how it went. Basically, Al's got some great stuff all about that. We're going to talk why. Then next up, why Mormons eat the way they do. This is some sort of
study.
This seems to be a rather sad foray into anthropology and sociology. I think money could be better spent elsewhere, but hey, whatever. And then people are dying in Nashville and something like that. Another issue is the role of women in politics in Utah, and whether the church organization has any bearing on that. And then a couple other goodies. I understand there's some sort of edifice being built in the Kansas City area that is of importance to people that might have grown up around there or something like that. So
you're a terrible person, Jeff.
So, you know.
Okay, so let me bring you up to speed on the YouTube bits. Last week we mentioned that there was a YouTube challenge where the goal was to the idea was that you would focus everybody into watching one video in one day, which would give it so much traffic that it would then be picked up in the trending topics of YouTube and onto the front page of like the most watched right now videos on YouTube, which the front page gets some like 11 million visitors a day ish from the US, not to mention what's going on worldwide. So, I mean, it was a pretty cool endeavor, because that would be good exposure, you know, especially if you could displace some of the boobified soccer clips and stuff like that, that tend to dominate the front page of YouTube. So it was kind of a cool idea, and we gave it the twin bump. We sure did. And so it started with 150,000 views roughly, and hit 230,000 views by the end of that day. So we had almost 80,000 views total. But surprisingly not enough to make it hit the front page. It was enough to get it into the trending topics of its category, so that was good. And trending topics overall, but you still had to click into links to see either of these. So pretty cool stuff. It was a good shot. And the cool thing I thought was everybody that I saw posting it on YouTube and kind of spreading it around, I mean, it was a good excuse to just say, hey, you know, here's this great clip. Feel really strongly about it. If you have any questions, I'd love to answer them. Give it a watch and tell me what you think. I mean, it was just kind of a very, very easy way to spread that around. So, pretty cool. Now, there's a couple of factors that may play into why this didn't work. Uh-huh. And the one that I like the most is the church has this Mormon Messages channel, which is also very prevalent in Mormon YouTubing and such. I don't know if that's an activity that we do as Mormons is YouTube, but so they have the Mormon Messages. the day or maybe 2 days before this big push into this other one or into this other video happens, the church releases its own video, saturating the YouTube link sharing market, because everybody spreads it around and they say, oh, this is a great video. You know, I think everyone should watch it, yada, yada, yada. The next day, we're supposed to do that with Jeffrey R. Hollins. The church sabotaged its own grassroots initiative. They killed it. They killed it. It was too much.
That's just the point of it. The YouTube challenge, the Book of Mormon challenge on YouTube, was not actually done by the church. So, you know.
It's true. And it was actually done by somebody I knew, and which was funny, because we went and posted on the page that we had given them the twin bump, and I got a message like right after. It said, hey, Al, thanks. Glad to see you're participating. Haven't heard from you in a while. I was like, whoa, hey, that's cool.
And now you will go to her.
How do you know it was a her, Jeff?
You will speak the words of love to her.
And so, yeah. So
be
YouTube,
with her, Al. So be with her. Her name is Torah. Be with her.
Torah Bright, why have you left me? But so cool, really cool idea. A lot of people really got into it, and you couldn't pick a better video to really push everything towards either, I don't think so. Anyway,
now
we gave it our best shot. 80,000, that's not bad.
No, it wasn't 80,000. Wasn't it 230,000, I thought you said?
Minus 150,000, Jeff.
Why minus 150? What did I miss?
Because that's what the video started at.
Oh, okay.
You have to do the simple math to get the accurate
numbers.
Which
I can't do. It's just the nature of the beast, I'm afraid. Now, have you seen the video posted by the church on the Mormon Messages channel that competes with it?
Yeah.
Have you watched it?
Well, I've watched the brief version. I haven't watched the full 8.5-minute one yet.
Oh, yeah. And I remember I've seen this story before, all about Stephanie Nielsen. I'm sorry. You know, the burn victim survived a near-fatal plane crash.
Uh-huh.
Interesting. Pretty life-affirming stuff, really.
Yeah, as a side note, great story, great video, and it's doing its own amount of good. Like, a lot of people have been really moved by it. So I don't mean to disparage that. I just mean to disparage the timing of the church's PR people.
They could not have waited a week.
2 days.
A week. And in fact, the Mormon Messages, the Elder Holland video that is used for this, is often part of Mormon Messages put out by the church.
I know!
They could have just listed that again and said, hey, a little reminder for all y'all. In the week leading up to Mother's Day, why should we put a story about a valiant mother who has gone through many trials and appreciates the value of motherhood? No,
you know,
no.
Sometimes I just don't follow the logic. I just don't follow the logic.
I know. I've watched that for many years now. Well, many, many years of Al not following any sort of logic. This
right.
Man is crazy.
Continue, Jeff.
Fine. I don't know if I have it in me anymore. I do want to say it is good, though. I think next time around we need to be stronger with the YouTube challenge. Do better with it, everyone, because there are more than 80,000 Mormons on Facebook.
Well, what the strategy needs to be is there's a site that'll actually auto-replay the video.
Oh.
And so I think I'm going to write a little, maybe a virus, some malware that'll be distributed over all computers and just start watching.
I like it. That's a good thing to do, because that will totally get, you know, quell the notion that the church is some sort of cult or sect, and that we're trying to, you know, brainwash people. I think it'd be a great idea to implant viruses and whatnot into people's inboxes, and then they'll all be so happy that now they're being sabotaged by the church.
It'll be for good, Jeff. I'll use these skills for good.
Skills can also be used for evil, Al.
It's true.
Just look at my massage capabilities. So true.
Anyway.
Evil. So, what do you eat as a member of the church? Because, for some reason, a woman named Kate Holbrook spends a lot of time thinking about food and trying to understand, well, basically this is her doctoral dissertation. It's called Radical Food, Mormon Foodways, and the American Mainstream. So she's talking about food in the church and what it signifies. Yep, it's true. And let's talk about what makes stuff distinctive. Okay, if you will, this is a brief article. This is in the Salt Lake Trib. Okay. take the two most typical Mormon dishes, right? Jell-O and the funeral potatoes, which I'm sure you've all had at some point in your life.
I have taken both of those, yes.
I think they are delicious. I love funeral potatoes. Okay. This is what... Now, this chick is no dummy, all right? She has a master's degree in theological studies from Harvard Divinity School and getting her doctorate from Boston University. So she's no slouch, right? But I still think this is just so obvious, basically. Anyway, let's go back to the Jell-O. Consuming a lot of Jell-O means Mormons, quote, like food that is sweet, that appeals to a large number of people, including children, is easy to prepare and inexpensive, and travels well either to large family dinners or church social occasions. It also shows Mormons value celebrations. Jell-O is festive, it's colorful, and it wiggles.
It should be a children's show in and of itself.
Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. Yes, and with freaky Australian men.
Thank you.
They are Australian. Sorry, it took me a bit
but,
to pick up
but
on
But doesn't Holbrook's
reference.
Research go well beyond those two dishes?
Oh, it does. Then she discusses funeral potatoes and how it diminishes class differences. Yes, funeral potatoes represent socialism.
Wait till
they
Glenn,
diminish
wait
class
till Glenn Beck gets a hold of this.
The people who bring funeral potatoes to a gathering have put aside their egos. Instead of putting on airs, they are trying to please the general palate. Yes, but of course it goes beyond the main dishes. She talks about all sorts of things and what it represents to Latter-day Saints. Terrific, ridiculous stuff.
Come
all
on.
About the food ways. I'm trying to find it. Anyway, the point of this is it's part of the Mormon Studies Fellowship, which is a grant at the U of U, I believe. So go figure. There is a Mormon Studies grant for graduate students. Now, the point of this is while I see it as a decent, you know, anthropological endeavor, per se. Sure, it's good to study things like that, understand that the food does affect community, who belongs, who, like she says, who belongs, who is excluded, who is equal, who is better. And so she's trying to find out how Latter-day Saints get around and work through these problems or issues, basically through food. I understand where she's coming from, but I think it's all a load of crap.
Why is that, Jeff?
Come on.
Talking to a divinity school graduate.
It also shows that Mormons value celebrations because it's festive, it's colorful, and it wiggles. So because Jell-O has color to it and happens to wiggle due to its gelatin-like nature, that means we clearly value celebrations.
Well, you know, that actually has some merit because if you've ever seen like a well-prepared dish of scrambled eggs, it kind of wiggles a little bit. I could see that. I could see that being a festive... You know, that would indicate if I was not festive, I would just have hash browns. But no, because I am, scrambled eggs, please. And put some parsley or mint in it. Thank you.
You're crazy. I'm not going to listen to you.
Well,
again.
All right. To your point, too, I've never actually had Jell-O brought to a church function.
Ah, well, there it is.
I've never seen it. I just haven't seen it. I've never lived in Utah, but...
And that is the problem. I feel like, is this really... This is not talking about Mormon culture. This is talking about Utah Mormon culture. Utah culture. This is not, which is different. This is not LDS culture in some, because LDS culture worldwide, when I lived in Scotland, nary a funeral potato or Jell-O was ever found anywhere at anything.
You can't tell me in Scotland they don't have potatoes, Jeff.
They do, but that... is a cultural element that is unique to Utah. I mean, sure, we do. Growing up in California, yeah, we'd have them at my grandma's house.
Aren't funeral potatoes the ones with the green beans and the little French onion?
No, that's French onion. That's green bean casserole.
Oh. I love that one, too, by the way. What are funeral potatoes?
I believe it's kind of when you tend to dice potatoes up. A lot of the time it has green onions, I want to say, in it. And cheese, it's almost like a potato and cheese casserole. People often put crumbled up like cornflakes on the top for a little crust.
I don't feel like we're very good Mormons because we don't have this down very well.
I like funeral potatoes. My grandma makes really good ones. I'm not going to lie. I enjoy eating it when we are around one another.
Do you feel festive because you do eat it?
No, because funeral potatoes are showing that there are no class distinctions in my family, that we are all on equal ground, that everyone will enjoy the funeral potatoes, that it doesn't matter who is a doctor or who works at the AMPM, We. I forgot. Do they have AM PM nationwide? I keep thinking.
No, they don't. But no.
It's only what it's a West Coast thing. Sorry, it's a convenience
but
I've so store.
Enjoyed it.
And
well,
anyway, that's my take. My only problem with this is I get it, but I don't think that it shows that Mormons in and of themselves value these things. I think this is centric to Utah. And while sure, the church has a strong foothold in Utah and it represents a large chunk of the culture there, I think it's, even at a domestic level in the U.S., I think it's too far-reaching to assume that because this happens, especially within Utah Mormon culture, that it can apply to the church all over the place. I mean, obviously there are exceptions. Not every family makes these dishes or this or that, but I think it's hard to judge the church based on a Utah culture. Not fair. Not fair at all.
It's indicative of a larger problem. It's true. So
if I were allowed to be on the panel as she defended her dissertation, I would grill her on this issue.
And then you would have mimicked the wiggling jello and said, is this what you mean?
No, you want to know a little something funny?
Your brother's doing it right now.
What's he doing?
Wiggling like jello. What's funny?
Some people call them wedding potatoes because funeral potato sounds kind of like a bummer.
Okay, anyway, I'm not even going to humor that.
You are going to humor that because it's not a joke. It's true, and it comes to you from Northern California.
So dumb. Jeff,
I am
you,
not
sir,
so dumb.
Are,
you
sir
are so dumb.
Are an
you,
idiot.
You, get off my phone.
Okay, so moving on. We're going to talk a little bit. You might have heard the big flooding in Nashville. Which is funny. I mean, I've said this before in a previous show, but we're to that point where it's like, oh, another huge disaster. Wah, wah, wah. Like, we're so callous to the fact that this stuff is just happening. But, like, you look at footage or you look at photos of this thing, this is a huge, huge disaster. Like,
I know. I mean, the oil slick is coming all over the place.
Like, New Orleans type devastation,
and there's all this flooding in New Orleans,
yes,
and apparently there was some giant earthquake in Chile
and in Haiti. Well, so I mean, like, it's I don't know, the magnitude of this is just happening more and more. So
what's the deal with the flooding in Tennessee, though? I admit I haven't followed it a ton. I've just seen it and kept aware of it, but I don't know a lot.
It flooded. There's a foot of rain in 2 days. And
that'll do it.
Yeah, just rocked it. So anyway, just kind of from a Mormon standpoint, all missionaries are safe. All members are safe. But 40 Mormon families were displaced by the flooding. So
harsh.
It's just crazy how much is going on in the world right now. But, you know, food for thought. There you go. That's just another massive, enormous disaster beyond comprehension for most people.
And to add to that, okay, sorry, these are more natural disasters because of rain. So I guess the oil problems in the Gulf don't apply. But still, I mean, we see what's happening in the world. It ain't looking pretty.
It's some crazy poop, man. There's a lot of drama.
All I am saying is if you find out two of the members of the 12 are on a trip to Jerusalem...
Then you have 3 years, so you're totally fine.
Oh, yeah, you know, a while. And like I said, my saving grace is I just assume that until we've got missionaries preaching every day in Mauritania, you know, we're pretty good.
Yeah, so let me know when
unless having access to the internet counts as having the gospel having reached every country. We've talked about this
that'd
before.
That'd be
anyway.
So funny. It'll just be like, no, you know, actually, I fulfilled that prophecy this way, and you're like, "Dang it! I thought I was for sure."
I based on all of the history and the scriptures, I would not put it beyond the whole plan to involve something like that. That it's really easy to take things so literally when, in all reality, it could mean something entirely different, something a bit more out of the box that we didn't think about. So
that God, he's an out of the box thinker. It's true.
God really is an out of the box thinker. I like that a lot about our religion. We have not, unlike many faiths that think that God can't talk to us, that, you know, the work with prophets is done, which is like every other religion. You know, we do not bind God and tell God what he can or can't do.
He's a very creative man at times, it seems. Yes, yes.
It's
true.
Don't mock me. I do think it's a legitimately good thing.
that we've It almost sounds like you're saying we've made God more creative than other people.
You're making me cry right now.
All right.
Tears are on my face. So let's talk about women in politics, but particularly in notoriously progressive Utah. Now, how many of you out there listening know a woman who holds
Three.
Any sort of statewide office in Utah?
Oh.
Do you know anyone?
I know women, but none that hold offices.
Does anyone know anyone? Yeah, you probably don't because, like, nobody does in the state. It's all men. It's a boys' club. It's a country club. It's bad news bears, my friends.
Those fatherless childs.
This is a problem. And this comes to you from the Deseret News, this article.
Hard-hitting reporting.
It is by Bob Burnick Jr. So, when your name is Bob Burnick, and you have the chance to go to Sparrow every day across from Temple Square, what's not to love? So, there's an interesting... Okay. Let's look at this. 74% of not-so-strong Republicans are men. Only 26% are women. This is in Utah. And among those who say they lean Republican in their voting, 62% are men and 38% are women. Now, this talks about, of course, the fact that the church has a dominant role in Utah, even if it doesn't officially have one, but because when you're just the dominant social group, it's natural that the dominant culture is what it is. So
do you...
scared you. I tried. Anyway, the point is, how does this affect us? This talks about whether or not the natural organization of the church, the fact that we're not trying to say what's higher or lower, obviously, because I firmly believe that no calling is more or less important, right? There are just different responsibilities. But because women don't have the priesthood, Relief Society president, obviously you could go to the general level, of course, but speaking, that is that's the ultimate, if you will. Now, men serve in a wide variety of different capacities instead. I don't need to name all of them, bishop, stake president, what have you, all the way up. And whether because of the way the priesthood is organized, if this instills in us sort of an expectation that this is how our general society should be,
so
if accordingly women don't seek political office, especially somewhere like Utah that has a dominant Mormon culture, merely because that's just kind of how it's been inculcated for all these years. Sorry, didn't mean to cut you off before you spoke.
No, that's all right. So the argument is that they're saying 70% of Utah is either active, inactive, or quasi-active Mormons. So 70% of Utah is associated with the Mormon Church in some way, is their premise. And then that because of the culture of the church, so far as the priesthood goes, that women are discouraged from going into politics? Is that the idea?
I don't know if it says as much strictly discouraged. Well, this isn't like it comes from anywhere to say, no, don't do this. But it does make sense, obviously, because also we believe so much in having women in the home and whatnot. Why would they go after this sort of thing,
I wonder too. I think there may be something to this a little bit because of kind of the overarching theme of the overarching, I guess, sentiment that I've sensed often is that there's the whole argument that a woman's place is in the home, right? Raising the family. And so there you have, yes, that element to it. And then on top of that you have the element of obviously a man wants the woman to succeed and do well and go and find herself and all that stuff. But I think for a lot of Mormon men, there's probably a little bit of jealousy partly because of the culture where the man would end up discouraging the woman from pursuing like a career in politics or pursuing a public office because of that, for that very reason of just saying, hey, whether it's a conscious move or not, I would imagine there's probably something to that.
You think so, huh?
What do you think?
It's hard to say if, I don't know. Okay, let's look at some things in Utah. Utah's had one female governor.
She was wonderful.
Olene Walker.
Failed.
And she was only governor because she was the lieutenant governor, which meant she became governor when Mike Leavitt resigned. I assume this is when he went to join the Bush administration. Okay? And that's it. And then when she tried to run again in 2004 in her own right, she didn't get the nod. It was that and that. So that's it. The only female governor in the history of Utah. Now, some of the reader comments on this make some interesting points. And some things I agree with, some things I don't.
Such
but
as?
What about the role of just the role of agency. You know, that we sit there and label this as if there's inherent sexism in a system and this or that, but sometimes when you get down to it, what if this is just the fact that it's a matter of choice? Whether women want to be involved in this, it would be a wantonly overarching statement to say anything that, like, women are generally less interested in getting into politics than men are. I don't think that's fair necessarily. It could be true, but I don't think it's fair to just label people that way. In the end, though, it is about who makes choices. No one is holding women back from being in politics if they want to be. I mean, it's true. We could complain all day that there aren't women in politics in Utah, but it's those who have a choice to do it or not. Simple as that.
So what about the like why would that only apply to Utah though? Wouldn't you have other states that were seeing similar kind of directions?
Sorry, help me say that again.
Well, you're saying, you know, it's based on agency. Why are Utah women less likely to choose that as an option then?
And I think in that sense, I think it could be misunderstanding. Look at, like, in the church, for example, we do preach that men and women are equals with different responsibilities, but equals nonetheless. Of course, this is the church in a social context, but there's no reason, I don't think, to say that this shouldn't be in a political context either. You know, that women are, they are equals with men as far as running humanity and this and that. There's nothing written anywhere that says that men should be running the entire show.
Then why don't we have more of them in Utah politics?
That is the question, and they should answer. I think a lot of it could simply be, yes, the fact that Utah has, you could look at all sorts of factors. Utah has a higher birth rate, lower average age of marriage is lower. I mean, when you have such a church influence.
The more I think about it, I really think that if a woman in Utah, it would be frowned upon because there's so much focus on being in the home, being with the family, that, you know, to have a woman out campaigning for office, it would be like a very kind of a faux pas-ish thing to do in Utah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think that would be far-fetched.
I don't think so either, and I think there is definitely to a degree a sort of inherent sexism in the sociological outlook of Utah that people would be taken back, or then they are taken back when there are women, especially if they claim to be quote-unquote family women or what have, you know, that are great moms and so involved in this and that.
Well, in Utah, I understand that it's not that we're picking on you. It's just that you're the example because of the density of Mormons. Like, I would look at my own family and see similar sentiments where, you know, I think I would be surprised if my mother decided to go run for, you know, mayor or something. It'd be like, all right, great, that's good. You know, but so for an example, I run a business back in my hometown where I employ my family, right? So everybody works there. And it's kind of it's a cool deal, but there's a lot of just kind of resentment because mom goes to work each day and goes and, like, helps run the business. And my sister goes to work and helps run the business. I mean, because we're all involved in this, a lot of people are like, well, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. There's just a lot of that just in the remote Mormon culture of, you know, the Midwest, or, you know, I'd imagine anywhere you go, it's going to be in a smaller scale, but Utah, because it's so densely populated, you're seeing this on a much larger scale to the point that it's noticeable. So,
yeah. And here's the one other idea into this. Is this a church thing, or is this the fact that Utah is the most conservative state in the country, which could play a whole different aspect of it because Republican doctrine does not harp so much on the areas. This is broad, but on the idea of compassion or forgiveness or being inclusive in this and that, which tends to be the way women are.
Women are
generally more liberal than men, and if you look at the studies in Utah, you know, the ratios for women who are Democrats compared to Republicans there's a huge chasm right there between those two. Sorry.
I think Jeff is saying that he wants to give the twin bump to Sarah Palin for being such a visionary.
Yeah, and that's another part of the ironies in that is that despite all of this, she can be wildly popular somewhere like Utah when she is a crazy working woman and this and that. And how can you honestly say that she is representing all these home values and la-ti-da when she spends all of her time on Fox News?
I don't know. Yeah, it is kind of a mixed standard.
Anyway, but you know what I mean? There's the whole idea of classic conservative values that emphasize, I don't want to say the malignment of the woman, but you know what I mean? The fact that they emphasize those strong gender roles in a lot of traditional movements, shall we
so,
say.
So
conservatism.
But if you had to pick a or pick a line here, would you say that what we're seeing in Utah is more religion based or more conservative party affiliation based?
I think it is more politically based than it is religiously based.
And there you have it.
That is my opinion. Give us your opinion at thisweekinmormons.com.
All right, so we're running out of time, but real quick, a couple other cool things.
Oh, Al, more good news for you in the temple front.
We have broke ground on the Kansas City Temple, which is great news. So very cool. They didn't have a lot of parking, so they had to do very select attendance.
Now, is it like in a suburb, or are they trying to go for some sort of downtown thing like Philly or
No,
Manhattan?
It's outside the downtown. It's towards the airport, actually. And so there's the developed Kansas City part, and then there's probably 30 minutes to the airport. And then I'd say about halfway between that, along one of the major highways, you have the temple spot. So it's kind of cool because it's very prominent. Like, you come up the bend and it's right there. Kind of, I would say, more St. Louis-esque, if you've ever been to that temple, where it's in a little suburb called Town and Country, but like it's along a prominent highway. So it gets a lot of visibility, but it's far enough out that you're not killing yourself with traffic trying to get there.
And the St. Louis one's actually on the Missouri side, right? It's not in Illinois.
Yeah, St. Louis is actually in Missouri, so that's what makes it really
I know,
nice.
But you know, I mean, the metropolitan area bleeds across the river, so I wasn't sure.
Oh, does it, Jeff? Oh, does
it? Does. And is this the same thing for the Kansas City one? It's still in Missouri, though, right?
Yeah, it is in Missouri.
It's not Kansas. It's not going over to the Kansas City, Kansas side.
No,
like that.
We'd never go to Kansas.
Oh, I'm a fool. What can I say?
So what's your wrap?
Oh, you
up,
just
Jeff?
Wanted to mention that. Also, I'd like to note that a lot of people weren't aware of this. The Vancouver Temple was dedicated last week.
Uh-huh.
We failed to give it even a mention. So there it is. There's a temple now in Vancouver. Little late for the Olympics. Would have been nice to tie those two together nicely.
No. The open house was there for the Olympics.
I don't think it was. I think it started just after the Olympics.
Oh.
Either way, good for them. I recall when I was in Vancouver, we tried to find the temple, and I've told the story before and how we got miserably lost because the members in the Richmond ward told us that it was right next to the Stake Center over there in Langley. And it was not. It's actually 5 lots over from the Stake Center, so we never found it.
Poor Jeff.
It was kind of sad driving around for an hour trying to find this temple plot and never finding it. So good for them. They got a temple there now, because their closest temple before was Seattle, if I'm not mistaken. So
it's not that far. What were they whining about?
It's not that far. It's a reasonably brief trip. But, hey, any church growth is good growth.
Amen.
And I'm good with that. Now, folks, we would like to leave you. We always appreciate you putting up with us. It's been a while since we talked about the Zarahemla Times.
I honestly didn't realize that it was still going on.
Well, of course it's still going on. Have you looked at how many episodes there are of this? We've linked to it
before. The man is publishing weekly. Like, just boom, one after another.
Every single week.
Still no comments. So we should go and leave. We should start leaving comments and just saying, like, we should make 100 just kind of faux profiles and go on and be like, I'm Billy Jean. I love your stuff. Could you imagine like 150 comments on one comic?
It would be the most. Do you realize how much effort that would be to create IDs on Google so we could comment on Blogger?
No, you. I think we can use OpenID. And I have a.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, I stand by.
Wait, so anyway, what were you going to say about
either way, this fine man has been doing this for 2 years now, since April of 2008. He has published a comic every single week. Never any comments.
Never any humor.
And there's no real reason we wanted to talk about this other than that I just went back there before the show just to get a look at the Zarahemla Times again. And once again, the strip for this week.
They're not funny.
May 7th. Let me walk you through May 7th, 2010, if you will. It says, shows Mom, whatever her name was, and her little Aryan son. Mom wants you to add these fish chunks when you plant the seeds. Next frame. The kid says, seriously? While there's a little drawing of like a carrot, like they're planting stuff. Then the sound splork.
That's in the third frame?
That's the third frame, sorry. And then the fourth frame, It just shows him saying, finally, something about vegetables that's cool. Because they went splork.
I want so bad for you to succeed, Zarahemla Times guy.
Come on, Kevin Beckstrom. Make it happen for us.
What if we started... What if we gave him ideas for funny things?
You know what's funny is the week before that, the strip also deals with planting seeds in the garden. It's like the exact same thing.
Maybe it's a 2-year story that's ongoing.
I don't know. Here, Kib, these are the seeds for our garden. Do you know these plants can trace their roots back to Nephi and Old Jerusalem?
But
it's like you're holding history in your hands. And then the boy says, great, vegetables and homework? Life doesn't get any better than this. And no, it does not, my friends.
With that, life does not get any better than this.
How we love the Zarahemla Times, and how we love you, Kevin Beckstrom. You're a visionary. Far more so than Sufjan Stevens.
Amen. Amen. All right, man. Well, Jeff,
it's done. It's over.
It's been
over.
A pleasure.
I fear the pleasure has been all mine, my good friend.
I fear so as well.
So, everyone, someone would like to leave us now. Oh, she doesn't want
it. In the shadow.
I was trying to get girlfriend to sing the Jell-O song to us. Anyway, everybody, we hope you had a nice Mother's Day. Hope you have a wonderful week enjoying this balmy May weather, wherever you may be. In some places, it's probably not that balmy, but I assume that the world doesn't operate outside of Southern California. So I'm just
you're all the same down
weather.
There.
We are. Give us our cookie cutter things.
All right, everyone. Have a good week.
Al, I love you. Thank you, sir.
All right. See you, Jeff.
And everyone, may peace be unto you as you carry on your week. This has been another exciting edition of your favorite podcast, This Week in Mormons. Bye-bye-bye.
Big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. It's Jell-O, yum, yum, yum. Jell-O pudding, yum, yum, yum. Jell-O tapioca pudding, try all three. Watch it wiggle, see it jiggle, smooth and fruity. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. J-E-L-L-O, it's alive.